The Dr. Shoup Show isn't trying to cause dental consumers to revolt. We're not trying to pull patients away from other practices. We don't need to.
You've left my locale and you now reside in San Antonio, Texas. Why on earth do you come halfway across the country to get your teeth cleaned?
I always said if I ever moved, I told my husband I will fly back to see Dr. Shoup. Keeping in mind, I had a lot of problems with my teeth. They bothered me. They were sensitive. After spending time with you, my teeth absolutely never bother me. I get compliments all the time on my smile. Not only do they feel good, but they look good.
Patients travel from out of state and outside of Indianapolis and Indiana to visit the doc's office because your host of this show doesn't treat based on billables. He treats to prevent ongoing dental problems and to save you money long term. So start your eye-opening experience at ddsradio.com right now. Here's Dr. Randy Shoup.
Well, welcome, everybody. It is great to have you here. Thank you very, very much. You know, I worried about it last week that I overloaded you with information and data, and I thought this week I'm going to give everybody a breather. But alas, no. You've given me such great questions by going to the website at ddsradio.com. I had to come in and respond to those pertinent things that you wanted me to respond to. This is where you come to become smarter, better informed, a more savvy dental, medical, health, wellness, nutrition, you name it, you're going to get it here. And you know how it starts at Dental School 101. You know, when you go to the dentist and you get your teeth cleaned, does your hygienist simply clean and polish your teeth, give you a toothbrush, pat you on the back and say, I'll see you in 6 months? You know, you could be getting seriously shortchanged if that's your experience. And in Ask the Expert, I'm going to give you another classic patented Uncle Randy connection between some very interesting data about U.S. growth and population and how there is a distinct dental connection. You know that you don't want to miss these because they're really cool. And also you get to meet my buddy Jay. Now, if you think that you get freaked out when you even contemplate going to the dentist, I've got the guy for you. Wait till you hear Jay's story. But you know what we're going to do first? Not all drinking water is truly the same. And as I sit here and sip my lovely, perfectly chilled bottle of water while I do the program, I'm going to tell you some research that's going to show you that not all water is the same. I'm going to tell you all about it right now.
Time to go under the microscope.
Where does that tremendous knowledge and energy all come from?
Well, this was pretty cool. I thought this was published recently, and it got my attention, and I'm sure it was going to get you yours. And it's called, Is All Bottled Water Safe That You Can Buy? Wow. So you and I all purchase a lot of bottled water, don't we? And so we certainly assume that it is all safe. But what they're talking about in this article is it safe for your teeth? Listen to this. Drinking water and staying hydrated is an essential part of being healthy. But picking up any brand of bottled water to quench your thirst and suggest a daily intake might not be the smartest move. Many bottled water brands have an acidic pH level and added fluoride, which can be extremely damaging to your teeth. And, you know, you don't think about it, but when we think about water that we buy in bottles in the store, that water has been processed by a company, and they do certain things to make the water taste a certain way. They do certain things to make the water have a good shelf life. You don't imagine or think about water going bad, but it actually can. Augusto Robles, who is a DDS and is the assistant professor at the University of Alabama Birmingham School of Dentistry, conducted a study to assess the pH levels and fluoride content on various brands of bottled water. I read the entire research study. He tested hundreds of bottled waters that he simply went into the convenience store, went into the grocery store, and just bought this one, this one, this one, this one, this one, took them back to his lab and tested them. If the bottled water has a pH, that's its acidic content, lower than 5.5, then it has the ability to literally dissolve the enamel off of your teeth. Which, you know, the enamel is that hard protective coating, the outer layer of your teeth, and if the pH goes below, if it becomes more acidic than 5.5, the enamel of your teeth literally starts to dissolve away. That pH level varies between brands because of the different processes each company uses to make the water clean enough to drink. The added chemicals and the filtration systems used ultimately affect how the water tastes and its final pH level. The study concluded that only four bottled water brands have a pH and a fluoride level that is actually safe for your teeth. And I know you're sitting there on the edge of your seat. What are the four bottled water brands? And as I reach over and pick up my number one bottled, it is Fiji Water, F-I-J-I. You see it. It has the great big flower on the front. Fiji Water is perfectly pH balanced, has the perfect amount of fluoride. Just Water, J-U-S-T, Water, W-A-T-E-R, is number two. Deer, D-E-E-R, Deer Park Natural Spring Water. And lastly, Evermore, E-V-A-M-O-R, Evermore Water. It is only those four waters, Fiji Water leading the pack, that met all of the criteria that Dr. Robles looked at in terms of ideal pH and ideal fluoride levels to actually strengthen and make your teeth healthy and not do damage to your teeth. So there are some off brands of bottled water that literally can damage your teeth because of how acidic they are. But go with Fiji Water, Just Water, Deer Park Natural Spring Water, or Evermore Water, and you cannot go wrong as I sip from my bottle of Fiji Water. Now, up next, are you getting everything you deserve from your hygienist? I'm going to tell you what that is right after this.
You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. Exclusive insider info, audio, and video is online now at DTSradio.com. We champion consumers in today's complex medical industry. Step one to smarter choices is listening to this radio forum. This is the Dr. Shoup Show. Ask Dr. Randy and his worldwide team of dental experts a question anytime at ddsradio.com. Now, here's your friendly Uncle Randy.
Well, I'm absolutely glad you're here. Thank you very, very much. And as I told you earlier, you know, if you go to the dentist and your dental hygienist puts you in the chair and sits there and cleans and polishes your teeth and hands you a little bag with a toothbrush and some floss in it and a little sample toothpaste and pats you on the back and says, I'll see you back in 6 months, is that really, in today's world, all you should expect out of that encounter? Let me give you a little different viewpoint on it and where we are today in terms of the state of the art, in terms of how your healthcare team and the dentist and the hygienist certainly are incredibly important members of that healthcare team. Let me tell you a new version, a new page gets turned and the latest and greatest incarnation of what that should look like for you. You know, I've told you before, there's a group in the United States called the AAOSH, the American Academy of Oral and Systemic Health, and it's called AOSH. And AOSH was formed, I was around early on when it was formed about 6 or 7 years ago. And really, it was a group of us that were very involved in research and very involved in total patient health and wellness that got together and said, we really need to bring a variety of different sources together and do more for our patients because there's so much data about the oral and the systemic, your oral mouth, systemic, the rest of your body connection, because we know the bacteria in your mouth, the bacteria that creates gum disease in particular, can get into your blood system and really change things a lot. So there is a journal called the Journal of Oral Medicine. And it has this new article in it called A New Standard of Care for Dental Hygienists. And it says, can you imagine going to work on any given day and know that another person's life was in your hands? Would your perception about dentistry change if we, the dentist and the dental hygienist, shifted from simply saving your teeth to actually saving your life, you, the patient? And so that is what I'm going to talk to you about today. There is indeed a significantly changing and shifting role that the dentist and the dental hygienist plays in terms of impacting your overall health, not just simply looking at your teeth. One of the things I want to tell you about, I want to pull the curtain back and give you some insights, is that it is the dentist in a dental practice that drives, in essence, the quality of the care. If your dentist is fanatical about quality, if your dentist is really, really focused on providing the best, the finest, the highest level of service, that's going to trickle down through everybody in the practice. It'll trickle down to the front desk. It'll trickle down to the financial manager, the insurance person, the dental assistant, and certainly the dental hygienist. If the dentist is not absolutely focused and driven and demands everybody produce that ultra high level of service, then nobody will do that on their own. Certain hygienists are highly conscientious. They really want to do the right thing, but they get into a dental practice where the dentist isn't as concerned about it. And so when the hygienist requests, hey doc, can I do this? Hey doc, can I start adding this therapy? Can I start adding this screening test? Can I counsel the patients on these oral systemic health questions? If the dentist isn't tuned into this, the dentist is going to say, no, we don't do that here. That's kind of not what we're all about. And so the hygienist is a direct reflection in terms of the hygienist quality of the quality of the dentist. So I want you to know that, you know, there are certain places and you are going to be able, now that you know, now that you understand, now that I've taught you, you are going to be much more discerning. So let me give you a list of things your dental hygienist needs to be doing with you every time you are together. And that and what that appointment with the dental hygienist should look like. And so here we go. Number one, the dental hygienist needs to get you into her or his room, sit down with you, and review your medical history. You need to have a conversation. What's new with you? What illnesses have you been experiencing? What sort of physical or health challenges have you had since we've seen you last? Tell me about your medication. Tell me about which medicines you're taking. Tell me about which supplements or vitamins or herbal products you are taking, because those things are critical in terms of helping you become the healthiest that you can be. So that's the number one thing. This needs to take at least a good 5 minutes, 2 minutes to 5 minutes of you sitting up, not laying down on your back, staring at the ceiling, having a conversation, but you two sitting up and having an adult conversation discussing where you are. You need to talk about how you have been feeling. You need to talk about literally how does my body feel? How am I emotionally? How am I doing socially? How am I doing at work? How are things at home? We know that stress levels have a direct impact on your immune system. And if your stress level is high, your immune system will be kicked into gear, and you will be suffering from a lot more immune system related illnesses, which means you're going to have redder, puffier gums. You're going to have more tender gum tissue. And rather than us thinking about there's some sort of an infection going on, really the reality is it is all driven by your heightened state of stress. So you need to have a conversation about how emotionally you're feeling, how stressed are you. Not just simply the technical, I'm taking this pill because I have this condition and I've been sick with the flu and I had this and this. We need to have a broader character, a broader conversation. So those are the first two things that need to happen. The other thing that needs to happen is you and the hygienist need to have a conversation about how well you sleep. Sleeping is absolutely crucial, and I want you to hang around for the remainder of the program because we're going to touch on this whole sleep issue in our next segment, and I'm going to bring a connection that you are not going to expect, but I want you to be there for it. But we want to have you talk about with a hygienist, are you snoring? And this is men and women. Women, you don't get a pass on this. Women snore too. Women have sleep apnea, and women have really, really, really crummy sleep patterns. And sleep deprivation, chronic, low-grade, sleep deprivation is absolutely horrendous to your body. So you need to have that conversation. And you need to talk about headaches. Tell me about the frequency of your headaches. Tell me if you have them at all. Tell me, what does it take to make them go away? You need to have this eyeball to eyeball, knee to knee conversation with your hygienist. Now, let's start to get into doing something. Number one, taking your blood pressure. Your dental hygienist should take your blood pressure every time you are together. And I don't care if you're doing a series of appointments that are fairly close together. When the hygienist begins the appointment, the hygienist should take your blood pressure. You'll have no idea how many times we have found people with high blood pressure and they did not know they had high blood pressure. We sent them to their physician and the physician would call back and go, hey, thank you very much. That was a great catch. I've not seen this person in probably a year, year and a half, and they were borderline high blood pressure then, but we decided to kind of wait and see, and now they're full blown. Now they're on medication and now you've maybe avoided a heart attack or a stroke. Your hygienist needs to do that. We need to have a conversation about your diet. Let's talk about food. Let's talk about what do you like to eat? What do you not like to eat? How do you hydrate yourself? What kind of things do you like to drink? And we need to have a very, very accurate measurement of the level of inflammation in your body, and that's done really the best way and the only way, simplest way, is by taking that little ruler and measuring your gums. When the hygienist goes 1, 2, 2, 1, 2, 3, 2, 3, every time that measurement is taken, the hygienist needs to look and see, is that location where I just measured the gums, does it bleed? If it bleeds, the number of those is, does 100% of them bleed? Do 80%, 50%, 20%? That percentage of bleeding, those numbers of bleeding points, is the best, quickest, fastest, most accurate measurement of inflammation in your gum tissue that we have. So that needs to be done on a regular annual basis for all the teeth, and your hygienist needs to do that just spot checking around the mouth every time you are together to give her a sense or he a sense of the amount of inflammation. The last thing you can do if you are in a very sophisticated environment is that the hygienist can take a sample of the bacteria out from under your gums and send it to a laboratory, and the laboratory will literally test the DNA of all the bacteria, and the laboratory will send to the dentist and the hygienist a very detailed list of all the bacteria that they find on that sampling. And so you'll know what bacteria are under your gum so that you'll know very specifically these are the things that kill those particular bacteria really, really well. And that's what we want to use. Or you can have your hygienist take a sample of the bacteria that are under your gums and put it on what's called a phase contrast microscope. They put it on a glass slide, they prepare it, they put it under a microscope, and the picture of the bacteria that was once swimming underneath your gums is now swimming on the slide underneath the microscope, and you look at it under a great big monitor. And you literally can pick out the rods and the cones and the spirochetes and all of the little organisms, if there's flagella there, if there's protozoa there, you can look at all those things and then determine what's going on. So that should be what you expect, and that should be what you experience when you go to and have an encounter, an experience with a really high-level, high-functioning dental office and high-functioning dental assistant. If you're not getting that, then you're in a location that is significantly behind the times because they're missing all of those key elements that draws together this whole oral and systemic connection. So if you don't ask those questions, if you don't look for those pieces of clinical data, if you don't look for the bacteria and try to identify them, then you simply are missing how to help you, the patient, in terms of making your life better, your body healthier, and getting you into the locations that you need, seeing the people that you need to see so that you can correct things. So that's where we know that it is the new standard of care for the dental hygienist to routinely do all of these things. So look at your personal experience. Think for yourself, is this what it's like when I go to the hygienist, or is this not what it's like? And then you can determine where is, are you getting the, kind of the level of care you want? Because these things could indeed be life and death decisions that you could be making or not making if they miss your blood pressure, if they miss your high inflammatory markers. There's a variety of things. So there you have it. Now you know you're better informed than anybody else. Now, coming up next, good old Uncle Randy is going to make a really cool dental connection between population demographics and dentistry. How will he ever do it? Stay tuned, and I'll tell you all about it right after this.
You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. Exclusive insider info, audio, and video is online now at DTSradio.com. Yes, healthcare costs are on the rise, but you mustn't neglect taking care of your physical well-being. That's why the doctor goes beyond talking teeth. This is the Dr. Shoup Show, discussing whole body health while making you a smarter dental consumer. Here's Dr. Randy Shoup.
Hey, what a beautiful day. All I need is a taste.
Well, it's great to have you here. Thank you very, very much. And here we go. Ask the expert. I come across so many pieces of information, so many research articles, and so much data that bits and pieces of them tend to stick in my brain, kind of like, Velcro. And for some reason or another, I have this ability to pull back out of the archives and dust off the cobwebs in my brain as I read a new article. I go, this sounds a lot like, or there's a connection to something I read 6 months ago. And I'll fish back through all of my files and go back through and go, here it is, because I don't throw away anything. And I fish back through my files, find this piece of data, and then I'll go, well, 6 months down the road and I'll read something else. And then, oh my gosh, this connects to those other two that I put together 6 months ago. And that's where we are here. There's been this trend in the United States for the U.S. population to take a dramatic nosedive, and it's called population demographics. And it is that there's an entire study in terms of what populations are doing. Are they growing? Are they contracting? Are they shifting? And it's population demographics primarily driven by economists. Economists love to do these calculations and figure out these things. But here's the thing. This is out of the New York Times. It says the growth of the U.S. population is at its slowest pace since 1937. The United States population grew by 0.7% last year. It is the smallest annual expansion of the population in 80 years. This is by the Census Bureau. The nation added about 2.2 million people that were born here in the U.S. from July of 2015 to July of 2016, bringing the total population to just over 323 million people. In relative terms, that was the slowest rate of annual growth since 1937, though the census changes from time to time and how they count people times to time, but it is the slowest growth. There are some exceptions. The state of Utah seems to be an exception in that it is actually increasing its population faster than the rest of the United States. And so I went in and did some research on the state of Utah, and I found some research that was being done now out of the University of Utah. And I thought this was funny because here's the University of Utah, which is a state-supported school, commenting on the state of Utah that they are in, that they get their funding from. And they said, basically, the state of Utah lags behind everybody else in about any demographic that you want to measure. And so if, you know, the economy boosts itself, you know, it takes 5 years for Utah to boost itself. If the economy lags behind, then Utah isn't going to lag behind. It'll have to take about 5 years because they are so apparently, they are so mired in their traditions that they have kind of an insulation. So the state of Utah is kind of an outlying. The fastest shrinking states in the United States are West Virginia and North Dakota. And that kind of makes sense because West Virginia, heavy duty coal country, there is no coal business anymore. And I don't care who, this is an aside, I've jumped off. I don't care who's talking to you. I don't care what they're saying. There is nothing, nothing that even begins to resemble clean coal. And it is simply economics that as long as natural gas is so doggone cheap, coal's never coming back. So they ought to get off of that horse because it died a long time ago and they're still trying to ride it. But anyway, West Virginia, shrinking population, and North Dakota, shrinking population. Why? Because of the oil shale and the fracking stuff. It was a boom town for a while, but now there are no jobs and it's shrunken. So now those states are shrinking. The most populous states in the United States, California, number one. Texas is number two most populous. Florida, number three most populous state. New York, number four. And Illinois comes in at number five. Those are the top five most populous states in the United States. So we see across the United States, with a couple of exceptional pockets, the population of the United States is shrinking. Okay? Now, what these economists look at is what are called fertility rates. And there are three measures of fertility. There's general fertility rate, okay? This is how many births are there per 1,000 women. Doesn't take into account anything, it's just how many. Number two is the completed fertility, which is lifetime births. How many births does a woman have in her lifetime? So how frequently are women reproducing? And then the third one is called total fertility rate, which is in the hypothetical, given what how many children a woman could have, how many are they actually having? And so those rates are all on really, really, really steep declines. The third article that I had was an article that is about U.S. fertility rates, and it's about the implications in terms of family planning. And there's a Dr. Alan Copperman, who is the director of the Division of Reproductive Endocrinology and Infertility at Mount Sinai Medical Center in New York. And he's saying this: we see more and more women entering the workforce and delaying childbearing. They're having a lower birth rate effectively. That's one of those parameters I told you about. But what we worry about is the non-elective birth rates, and in other words, the reproductive challenges that are facing women today as they try to conceive. So what these folks are saying is this: the U.S. population is shrinking, women birth rate is being reduced down, and what we're finding is from Mount Sinai Hospital, how women are having trouble conceiving. Here's the dental connection. Sleep duration may directly affect the integrity of sperm DNA. In other words, how well you sleep, how effectively you sleep, how completely and restfully you sleep has a direct effect on how robust your little wigglers are. And what they found was that if you are sleep deprived, if you get less than, and listen to this, if you get less than 7 hours of sleep a night, you men, your little boys are defective, they're not active, and they literally can have changes in their chromosomes to make them not as effective in fertility. You also, if you get greater than 9.5 hours of sleep, you also start to see an effect. There's a sweet spot. There's a peak of the bell curve between 7.5 and 8 hours of sleep a day for you to have the most effective, robust, potent little wiggling guys so that you can be successful at fertilizing your wife, girlfriend, whatever you want to think. So we're seeing huge population decreases. We are seeing women having difficulty conceiving. And we know now that sleep deprivation is really a high effect on the characteristics of sperm. So we know that sleep apnea is one of the greatest effects on sleep quality. So by wearing a TAP appliance or getting a CPAP machine, you could participate in repopulating the United States of America. So there you go. Wave a flag and go to sleep, and you will be better, healthier, more robust, and the country will thank you very, very much. So there you have it. Now, up next, you get to meet my good friend Jay. I tell you what, he even freaks out at the thought of getting in the car to come to the dental office. He's going to tell you how he overcame that right after this.
You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. Exclusive insider info, audio, and video is online now at ddsradio.com. Every week, the doc is seeing new patients that heard this radio show. They come into the office for an initial consultation, and then they believe what they heard on the airwaves.
Why are you smiling like that?
I just like to smile. Smiling's my favorite.
A real dental difference. Real results. That's microscopic dentistry by Shoup. This is the Dr. Shoup Show, online at ddsradio.com. Here's Dr. Randy Shoup.
Who Well, it's great to have everybody here. Thank you very, very much. And I've told you all before, this is probably my favorite part of the whole hour that we get to spend together, because I get to bring one of my friends on and you get to have a chance to listen to them. And today is really, really special because, Jay, how are you, buddy?
I'm great today, Doc. Everything's going my way today.
Well, that's good. That's good. He's so formal. Because Jay and I have known each other forever, and it's mostly Jay and Randy. And I will tell you that I don't want to give too much away, but this guy is a highly, highly skilled and accomplished musician. And if you ever need anybody to play for you in a blues band, he's the guy to call. But that's not what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about, I told everybody, Jay, you have probably one of we got Olympics going on. You're one of the gold medal performers in terms of having such an awful traumatic experience as a kid. It really scarred you, and it is a mountain of emotion that you have to get around, even to get in the car and drive to my office. So how on earth do you get there?
Well, you're right. I did have had this terrible experience with a dentist when I was six, and he was doing the best he could, and it wasn't very good. And so I've just always had difficulty trusting dentists. But the way I get in the car and come up there today is because over the last, I guess it's been close to 20 years, we've built this great relationship. I know they're not going to hurt me. I know that if you are going to hurt me, you're going to explain why, and you're going to give me some options on how to deal with that. I mean, the truth is that some dentistry requires a little pain. But it's been very helpful to me that I trust. I remember the first time I came to you for a consult, I told you that I was going to be the worst patient you had ever had, and you kind of snickered because you didn't think that I, you thought I was just saying that, but you assured me that no matter how it played out, that you would find solutions and interventions that would work for me, and you have. One of the things, something that comes to my mind, I remember that, my anxiety would be so high that no matter what you would give me to deaden the pain, my heart would pump it away from the area. And you found, at that time, you found, I don't think it's Novocaine, but some sort of a local anesthesia that wouldn't make my heart race quite as much. And that helped at the time. So I know that you're going to be creative. We've explored a lot of different things over the years, and we've gotten through the work.
Yeah, you're listening to the Dr. Randy Shoup Show. I'm your host, Dr. Randy Shoup, and there is probably one of the most candid, open, honest people that you'll ever meet. I mean, talking to you about how one incident when he was 6 years old marked him so badly that it made it almost impossible. And you and I have over the years figured out ways of which we can do pretty much most all of the things in dentistry. It wasn't that we just didn't do anything. We restored your teeth. We put things back together. We had to do some more elaborate work from time to time. But the key was that you and I were willing to work together and to communicate and to, to sort things out and figure them out and trial and error. And we made it work together. Man, I got to tell you how proud I am of you in hanging in there and trusting me. And then the more we succeeded, then the better trust we had, and then the more we succeeded. So, man, thank you.
Well, thank you. I don't know if you remember this, but the first time I came to see you, I hadn't darkened the dentist door in 10 years.
Yeah, I remember.
It's just out of, just sheer fear. And I remember, we had to do some cleaning, of course, after 10 years, and we could only clean one quadrant of my my teeth at a time, and we had to use local anesthesia just to clean my teeth. Everything was so in such a state of disrepair, and that's where it all started.
Yeah, but you got to work with that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but you bring up a really good point. I mean, we got together, and the best that we could do at that time was to do one quarter of your cleaning, and we were done. That was all we could do, and that's okay. There isn't anything that says that you've got to accomplish all these certain things. So, you know, dentists need to be willing to work with people and play in your sandbox rather than make you play in my sandbox.
Right. And at that first consult, you know, when I told you that I was going to be the worst patient that you had ever had, I remember saying, you know, if you can help me, that's great. If you, you know, if you're not willing to take me on as your worst patient ever, let me know right now. I'll go on down the road. And you were very confident at the time, probably because you didn't know what you're getting into.
It's easy to be confident when you're ignorant.
Well, I think you and I have both learned a lot about this anxiety issue. I've done some things on, I've done therapy. I've done some things on my own to help me get on top of it. And you have, you know, I believe you have, well, I think there's a lot more education available about anxiety in the dentist office now. That, I mean, the original doctor who was the cause of the original sin here, he wasn't trying to hurt me. He wasn't trying to scar me for life. I don't think there was much. I don't think there was much known on this topic back in the. In the 50s when I started out at the dentist.
Yeah, no, they taught you, here's what you have to do, and you have to go through it, and you just have to tell people to, you know, to hang on, and there was very little education in terms of emotional intelligence, of, you know, soothing somebody emotionally and to make a connection and to help them get through it. It was kind of an all-or-nothing proposition, and you got the all-or-nothing. And right. I've told you before, I wasn't even there, but man, do I apologize. That was not a nice thing to do.
Well, I hope he's long retired and not hurting anybody anymore.
Well, I'm sure that's the case. I mean, we can all breathe a sigh of relief about that. But hey, look, man, I have taken up enough of your time. I really appreciate it. Thanks for sharing your story with my listeners, and because there's so many people that contact, you know, every dentist and say, hey, I'm just petrified, and for them to know that there are some places they can go where there is light at the end of the tunnel, there is possibly a solution. Thanks for sharing that story. I hope it helped somebody. I know it probably has. So thank you.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I'm grateful for the opportunity. I know that I have at least two friends that have come to you when they were facing really big dental crises, and you got them through it. Just because they knew I had had a good experience with you. And so it's not me. You're the one who's making it happen. And I hope you can help some other people that are as scared as I was. So, thanks for the call.
Well, thank you. Thank you very, very much, Jay. I appreciate it. Listen, say hello to your lovely bride for me, please. We like her too. And I'll see you at the office next time, buddy. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right.
Have a great day.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Well, there you have it. I promise to go easier on you next week without so many facts and figures and so much data. I just took delivery of 50 backpacks getting ready for the Kenya program, and I want you to know that we all want your help as well. Please don't think that we are done. Go to ddsradio.com, and you can find out more about how you can help us on our next trip to Kenya. So, until you and I chat next time, be sure to brush and floss.
Keep on smiling, 'cause when you're smiling, baby, the whole